This is the Shift Podcast.
Today on the Shift Daily Podcast, how much is YouTube worth? Their entire library, what do you think? If they were ever to sell it, what about the Beatles? Yet you look at Kiss as a band, and there's not only the music, there's also all of the merch. Canadian music expert Alan Cross chats with us why artists are now selling their catalogs. Who could be next, and why would they do it? On the Millennial on the Radio, Ryan O'Donnell updates us with tennis legal challenges in Australia. YouTuber crashed a plane, maybe on purpose. More. What about goldfish? Do you love goldfish? Goldfish are the best snack, but real goldfish could drive. And are you okay with being home alone? All of this and more coming up on the Shift Daily Podcast.
This is the Shift Podcast.
Are you okay? Are you okay with being home alone?
Oh, yeah. Love it.
Yeah, definitely. I miss it.
Silly question.
I don't really get a lot of home alone time anymore. Having a roommate, that was a good thing. Miss that.
That changes for you. That's that whole. You get to a point where you just don't want to have a roommate anymore. Where the financial benefits of having a roommate do no longer outweigh the. Cooking bacon with no pants on.
So true. So 100% true. I will. Right? And no more roommates. That's it. None for the rest of my life. They're either going to be significant others or that's it. I'm by myself.
That's it. How's that for a jaded outlook for you, Ryan?
Well, my plan currently is this place, next place with my best friend, and then move in with Laura. So... I will not currently the plan, I will not have the chance to live completely on my own So I don't know. That might be a good thing though.
Why?
Because then I better for your mom. Like, experience that and feel how wonderful that is. I can just settle with this.
You know what? Nothing makes me happier than when I hear you set the bar so high that you say, maybe I don't need to experience how great that is. I can just settle now and not have to worry about it.
Yeah.
That's my job. Setting the standard, you know? That's what we're going for here on the Shift. It's real nice. The first time your parents let you stay home alone, though, in their house is a big deal. Kevin McAllister showed us how awesome it can be. Eat whatever you want, watch a scary movie, but also showed how awful it can be, because it can be spooky too. Unfortunately, though, there is a real life Home Alone story now to share with you. Parents of an 11-year-old boy were arrested in Arizona this week after sheriff's deputies alleged he was left alone at home and had not attended school for 2 weeks. Here's more from Fox 10.
Law enforcement did a welfare check on their home in the town of Elfrida. They did this back on December 12th, and they learned that the mom, here's her mugshot, 34-year-old Melissa Green, had left the state before Thanksgiving. 40-year-old Bobby Green left shortly after. Now, the boy told deputies there was frozen food in the home and that he hadn't been to school for 2 weeks. That child is now in CPS custody. Deputies finally made contact with the couple on December 29th. Both are being held on a $100,000 bond.
Now, did I miss something? Did they say where they went?
No, they just went somewhere for Thanksgiving.
Very long Thanksgiving.
Very long.
I mean, 11, you're pretty good then, right? You can open a bag of chips, no?
I probably first got to be home alone when I was around, 11 or 12, I would say, and I was okay. But for a couple of weeks, I mean, like for a few hours, I was fine. I could not sustain myself. No question. This kid had a lot of frozen dinners.
Now, my daughter keeps saying, Dad, I'm okay to spend the night in the house by myself. But every time that we've even planned something like that, and because she really wanted to do it, if I wasn't here and her mom was on board and we had the neighbors knew about it, they're literally like, it's a townhouse. They're right there. She's bailed. Nope, not going to do it. Things get spooky. You start to notice those noises at nighttime. I mean, who loved going to the basement when you were by yourself in the house? Right? Am I right? Spooky. Are you okay? Are you okay with goldfish? Best snack ever.
Oh, the crackers. Yeah, the crackers are incredible. Absolutely. Good commercials. Those crackers carried me through elementary school. Like, it was a staple of every single lunch that was packed.
Loved it. The best.
They were kind of made my mouth dry. Cheesy. Not a big fan.
I like because they have a little bit of salt on one side. And when you put them in your mouth just right with the salty side down, beautiful.
I guess.
She knows exactly what's up. And you don't need to do cheese and crackers because it's a cheese cracker. You don't need to have to cut cheese. It's just like reach your hand in the bag, grab as many as possible, and just slam it back. It's the perfect snack.
Would you be a one-at-a-time eater or like a handful at a time?
No. In fact, my ex-girlfriend, I think the thing she hated about me the most, aside from my personality, was the fact that I shoved my face with popcorn and goldfish, like, not one at a time. Laura, like me, we are multiple crackers and popcorn at a time.
Not my personality, clearly. We know why it didn't work out, huh? Well, this could be one of those fish that Ryan calls whitefish, or Brennan calls just have whitefish. Probably the first pet most people had. It wasn't like a goldfish, it was like one of those betta fish, right?
Yeah,
cute little fish. They're easy to take care of, you know. When they die, the parents can slip a new one in and nobody ever knows. Huh, my goldfish has lived for 7 years. Sorry, Billy, that's not the case. Your parents are liars.
Did you know that goldfish can live like up to 20 years if you take care of them?
What?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Seriously, 100%. They can live for 15 to 20 years, which is ridiculous. Really? Yeah, they can. You just have to really take care of them and they be in the wild, not just in a tiny little jar in a kid's room. Those goldfish are
I believe most things you say. I'm not sure that 10 to 15 years. Holy crap.
Yeah, right? I was
average lifespan. I believe most things you tell me. This one, I'm sorry, Ryan, but I did doubt you. I will take that.
That's fair.
Average lifespan of goldfish should be 10 to 15 years, with some varieties living up to 30 years with the proper care.
Whoa.
Yeah, I think most kids are not giving the proper care.
There are goldfish on this planet, Ryan, that are older than you.
Yeah.
That's insane to me. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, there are goldfish that remember the release of Smells Like Teen Spirit. That's crazy.
Okay, well, there's egg on my face. I didn't believe Ryan. There's a lesson for you. He can't type, but he's believable. There aren't many uses for goldfish. However, they can be invasive in lakes and ponds. Speak of the devil.
Coming, yeah.
You were excited for that one coming, weren't you?
Yeah.
You know, I do need to give credit. This is totally a sidebar and scatterbrained of me to do. Sorry about this, but I'm going to change the topic. I do need to acknowledge, because on Thursday, Ryan had zero typos.
Mm-hmm. Up in my game.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Up in my game.
Nailed it in Friday, too. That's crazy.
Yeah. Right? Oh, well. But this one? No.
No. That's a typo.
Or in lakes and ponds. Ponds has an O. They don't taste good, but can they drive a car? Scientists had been Gurion, never heard of it. Sorry, I hope I said that right. University of Israel are finding out how to teach these simple-minded creatures to do something that Ryan can't drive. Specifically, he wrote that, just to be clear. That's not
I did write that.
The team set out to examine what happens when fish are immersed in a terrestrial environment by building a fish-operated vehicle, or FOV. The teaching the six goldfish how to drive, they were able to find out whether a goldfish's navigational sense translates to land or whether it's restricted to water. Interesting notion. The FOVs, these are essentially a fish tank on wheels equipped with a computer, camera, and LIDAR, a device that targets objects with laser beams, and measures the distances their fish can stay immersed in water where it can breathe, and the tank responds to the fish movement. Basically, when the fish swims, the tank drives.
Equip the water tank with sensors so it doesn't collide with obstacles in the environment in case the fish decides to get too close to a wall, but also with the camera that can sense where the fish is in the water tank and guides the vehicle according to that pose of the fish in the tank. But every time it gets to the target, we award it with a food pellet. And over time, it's pretty quick. After a few days, 10 days maximum, the fish understands that it needs to find the target and drive that vehicle towards that target. One thing for sure, we did learn that a fish, small and primitive maybe to some people, and primitive as it might be, is very capable of learning very complicated tasks like driving sort of a car.
Sort of a car. Researchers told Live Science that he hopes to one day set the fish free in a natural environment and see how well they can navigate a less contrived situation or how quickly they can become lunch. Are you okay? Are you okay with The Godfather?
I think it's a great movie. Hey. Did you know he actually stuck Marlon Brando put cotton balls in his cheeks to do that voice for the movie? Yeah, the movie itself is like incredible. It's one of the few mobster movies that I genuinely love. I enjoy a lot of them, but The Godfather is something special. In fact, it is so special that I one time walked into my apartment, I could smell pasta cooking, and my roommate was listening to Italian music and making the spaghetti recipe from the movie, like by instruction. And I was just like, that's the power of that movie right there.
Were you afraid?
No, there was no dead horse in my bed. So I was.
Clear. That was gross.
Yeah.
That seemed not good.
I was going to suggest we needed, instead of the regular Are You Okay music, we needed Godfather music, but it was in there. I just didn't see it. It's Monday. There it is.
There it is. Beautiful.
Are you okay? I don't know how to say are you okay in Italiano.
Are you okay? No.
Okay. Apparently Mario is now.
Yeah, it was very Mario.
All right, The Godfather, the best mob movie of all of the times, I would go out there to say. Now, I've thought many times about this too. You know, should it be redone? Should it be retreated? All those things. Because it does lack today's Hollywood sparkle, but the script and the acting is just so good. So I would say it goes the other way. It almost needs a treatment to make it look more retro, right? Like a filter, not even a redo, just a filter. Reprocess it, make it look older, more retro. But, you know, I don't think you can touch it, though, successfully. This storyline, though, did help push mafia stories into pop culture when they were a big thing. Now, today, we have a story of a real-life Italian mobster. This guy isn't a Don. He's more like a dumb. Here's more from WBIR Channel 10.
A member of the Italian Mafia who's been on the run for 2 decades was found and captured thanks to Google Maps. Gioacchino Gamino escaped from an Italian prison 20 years ago. Thanks to the street view function on Google Maps, detectives spotted him outside a grocery store in Spain. He's there in the tan shirt on the right. Gamino was even surprised the detectives that found him and told them he hadn't even been in contact with his family in the past decade. He's now on his way back to Italy where he will serve out his life sentence.
He's like, okay, crazy? Okay, you can send me back to jail. You did good. You found me.
The shop and the restaurant are now closed, but police found a photo of Gamino dressed in his chef's garb on a still existing Facebook page for La Cucina de Manu. He was recognizable by the scar on his left side under his chin. The restaurant's menu included a dish called Cena Sicilina, or the Sicilian dinner. Now for some mafia story, maybe some more mafia music. Gamino belonged to a mafia clan in Agrigento? I don't know how to pronounce it.
Sorry, my script is loading. I was going to help you. But it's here. That would be
Agrigento. It's got to be Agrigento.
Agrigento. Yeah.
Sicily. Learning new things here. Which was caught up in a bloody feud with Cosa Nostra, Sicily's main mafia network in the 1990s. He was first arrested in 1984 when he was investigated by the anti-mafia judge Giovanni Falcone, who was assassinated by the mafia in a car bomb in 1992. Oh my.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. This dude was like a serious mobster. And the picture that they found on Google Maps is him like leaning up against this now defunct restaurant, which is just, I feel like once he got caught, he was like, all right, yeah, I'm probably meant to go back to jail now. There's just no way that doesn't happen up for a reason.
It does make you wonder how good his Sicilian dinner was, though, if it was any good. Let's hurry into one more so we don't miss it. Are you okay with Jeopardy, the game show, ?
Yeah, definitely. I haven't watched it in a while, but it's classic.
A lot of changes.
Yeah, I like it. I feel like we needed the Jeopardy music back there.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, why not?
Do I have that here? Thank you. It's been a wild couple of months for the classic show. After the passing of Alex Trebek, the show's gone through an executive producer, then another host who was also the producer, and he turned out to be, allegedly, a dirtball, and so much more. Now there's another sad Jeopardy story, but this is way more frustrating. Jeopardy champion Amy Schneider, who was recently dubbed the show's highest-earning female contestant, said Monday she was robbed last week. Here's more from People.
The Ohio native, who currently resides in Oakland, California, tweeted that she's fine, but was robbed of her ID, credit cards, and phone. She added that she couldn't really sleep and has been dragging herself around all day trying to replace everything that was stolen. In a second post, Schneider noted that she'd likely be unable to live tweet that night's episode like usual because of the robbery, adding that if she keeps winning on the show, it may take a bit for her to get caught up. Schneider has gained recognition recently for her record-breaking run on Jeopardy. In November, she became the first transgender contestant to reach the beloved game show's Tournament of Champions, telling ABC 7 that it was a great feeling because it's been so fun, and because it's important to her to send a, quote, positive message to the nerdy trans girl who wants to be on the show, too. In December, she became Jeopardy's highest-earning female contender.
Amy Schneider has run away with it, though. She became only the fourth contestant and first woman in Jeopardy history to win more than $1 million on the regular game show Loaded. She better double check that identity theft thing so no one can tap into her bank account because she won a bunch of dough.
This is the Shift Podcast.
What would psychedelic Sunday adjacent show be without the expert of all experts in this topic? Which is kind of ironic because the story that he wrote had nothing to do with psychedelic Sunday. We've simply adopted it to our program and taken credit for it. So we should probably give him credit again and let Alan Cross come back on. Oh man, the ongoing history of new music is the most amazing of the podcasts. If you just like music and you want to learn and just find out even just what's new and what's old and all that fun stuff, behind the scenes stories, you name it. This is the podcast that is going to be the perfect road trip podcast for you. Give it a go. Alan Cross, happy Sunday/Monday morning to you, sir.
Good. Thank you for not saying Happy New Year because we've passed the statute of limitations for that.
Did we? It's 1 week, I heard. Is that fair
one
enough?
Week? Well, yeah, we're done.
Right. No longer Happy New Year, by the way.
No.
So is this where we start just complaining about 2022 and we're like, oh man, is this ever going to end? Because
I started that on the 3rd of January. Are you kidding me?
All right. Before we get started, we need to say hello to a very special shift head who listens to the program. And that's Shirley. It's Alan's mom.
Yeah, she listens all the time. So.
Oh, lovely.
Yes, she stays up late when the kid's on the radio. So, hi, Mom.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you for being here and taking time out of your busy schedule and telling us stories about how artists sell their catalogs and which ones do it. I have so many questions about this because we hear about it in the news, Alan. We hear, you know, oh, the Beatles sold their catalog and Michael Jackson bought it and then Michael Jackson sold it and all these things. And I imagined it being a bunch of boxes in a corner. But then I got confused because when I first met BJ Hamilton, which is David Foster's first wife, in their divorce, she inherited a bunch of songs. And I found that out because I was doing it was a David Foster fundraiser and BJ was there helping out with it. And we played Cheryl Lynn Got to Be Real from 1978 on the show. And she said, oh, that's my song. thanks. And she's happy that she gets paid. And I had no idea. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's your song. And David Foster produced it. It was one of the ones that was coughed up in the original divorce. So this was a few years ago. So maybe it's sold since. But at the time, she owned it. Is that how it works?
Yeah. What happens is that a song's copyright is owned by the person who writes it or the people who write it. In many cases, that though the copyright may be assigned to the record label, but let's just, for sake of clarity, say that if you write a song, you own the copyright to it. You own the publishing to it. And that means that with a publisher, you share 50-50 of all proceeds that come in from things like selling records, streaming, when people cover your song, radio airplay, and so forth. Now, what has been happening is that a lot of heritage artists, and these are artists in their 60s and 70s, and in some cases 80s, who've been around for a very long time, have these large catalogs of songs that they've written. And these songs provide a nice, steady source of income, you know, every 6 months when the royalty checks come in. What's been happening is these big companies with names like Jampol and Primary Wave and Hypnosis have raised a ton of money to buy up these catalogs. So what happens is they approach these artists and say, look, you're in your 70s. You've probably got, you know, a few more years on this earth. Why don't we pay out how much money you would earn if you were to live, I don't know, till 80 or 90 or 100 or 110 or 120 or whatever. So you have all this money up front to do with what you please. And the songs become our property. And you don't worry about us because we will not only make our money back, but we will make a profit on your songs. And we will help these songs live a lot longer than you because it's going to take decades to pay off this investment. So a lot of artists have been taking advantage of this. In fact, just in the last couple of days, we heard that John Legend sold a significant portion of his catalog, a very rare mid-career move.
Yeah, he's young. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Nancy Wilson of Heart is the latest to sell a significant portion of her catalog. I think she sold to Primary Wave. So these, and I have to underscore that this is not selling out. This is money that the artist would have earned regardless if they had only stayed alive longer. And what you do is you look at how much money a songwriter's or a performer's catalog makes in a given year. You average that out, and then you assign a multiple to it. So 5 times, 10 times, 20 times, 30 times, whatever. And then that becomes the purchase price. In the case of Bruce Springsteen, he was making somewhere around $13, $15 million a year in royalties. And they assigned a 30x valuation to that. So the final outcome was a payout of $550 million. The other good thing about this, despite, you know, along with getting all that money, is that when you get regular royalty checks, that's taxed as if it were income, just a basic salary. If you take all your money up front, that in the United States is taxed as a capital gains. So instead of paying 40 or 50% on this money, you're paying 20%. Any questions? Yeah. Probably not. And then you have all this money that you can use to organize your estate, to deal with your heirs, to maybe you want to get into some other investments that require a little bit of capital. Maybe you want to get into activism or philanthropy or whatever it is. You've got the money to do it, and you've got nothing to worry about financially for the rest of your life. So we're seeing a lot of these artists take advantage because right now it is a seller's market and the money's out there. So these artists are coming along and accepting these offers, knowing full well that this cycle is not going to last forever. And if they miss it this time, well, when's the next opportunity? Is it going to be, you know, 5 or 7 years when they're 85 or 90 years old, or do they pick it up now?
It sounds to me like it saves a lot of work, right? Like if, because I'm assuming, and please adjust my statement if it's incorrect. So right now, if it's, say, I don't know, Paul McCartney, it becomes Paul McCartney's estate that inherits the library, right? So then it's up to his estate to deal with the business of the library. At least in this particular case, the business of the artist continues. It's kind of like any family business, I would assume, at that point, where it's possible your kids just don't care. They want the money and they're not into the music world. So why not let someone run it who's going to run it and keep that legacy alive? Is that fair?
Very possible. And I would suggest that's what happened with David Bowie's estate when it was sold just before Christmas. He got $250 million for all his songs. And now that becomes the, Warner Chappell who bought that one. And now the estate can just, okay, here's $250 million. We'll pay our 20% capital gains tax. We'll divide it up amongst the heirs. And then maybe what we'll do is put some money aside for Aman so she can, you know, live out her life in comfort and without any sort of any worries. And then maybe, I don't know, we'll put some of that money to work into one of Bowie's, you know, causes or who knows? It's yeah. their money to do with what they please.
GameStop stocks. Definitely GameStop.
Bitcoin.
Oh, this is so cool. I mean, I love this. So who's really ripe for the picking, if you will? You know, with this article, it's available at globalnews.ca. Who do you have in mind that might bite the worm on this one?
Again, these are just, it's just speculation because we know these companies are going after valuable catalogs. So let's look at some artists who have lots of songs that continue to make lots of money on an annual basis. Number one on my list is Sting, because there were some very strong rumors before Christmas that he was about to pull the trigger on a really, really, really big deal. And when it didn't happen, it was like, oh, that's weird. We were sure that was going to happen. So give that a bit. So Sting, number one. Kiss. I talked to Gene Simmons last month, and I asked him in this frenzy, would he and Paul Stanley ever sell? And his answer was, how much you got? You know?
Yeah, I think it's for sale with that guy, though, isn't it?
It is. He is the most, I mean, there's like 4,000 Kiss-branded items in the marketplace at any given moment. And the other thing that Kiss owns is all these trademarks. So, you know, likeness and images, which are very important to an overall purchase like this, because it's not just the music. It's what the music looks like when it's being played. Mm-hmm. So, you know, who knows? I mean, we're down to Gene and Paul. They are going to stop touring soon after about 100 more shows. Maybe they'll just want to, you know, cut out and cash out, and Gene can go do whatever he wants to do. Another band, and this is the third on my list, would be the Eagles. That would be a monster deal. Oh, which would be, because, you know, the Eagles have sold, you know, so many hundreds of millions of records. I mean, the greatest hits album volume one is like 40 million on its own.
Isn't that still like the biggest or one of the biggest ever?
One of the biggest ever. Yeah. And if you were to, you know, carve everything up, you know, there's Don Henley, there's Joe Walsh, there's Timothy B. Schmidt. Those are active members right now. Then you've got Glenn Frey and Don Felder and Bernie Leadon and Randy Meisner, old artists. You could sell, all, you know, approach all of them, or more likely, as what you did what we saw with Fleetwood Mac, is approach them individually, and they sell their songs. And I tell you, the guy that would buy it is a guy named Irving Azoff, who used to be the Eagles' manager. He has got a company called Iconic Artists, and they are buying up catalogs. So I would imagine Irving would be first in line with the checkbook.
Probably gets the instant referral, right? Like, call your buddy first.
Yeah. Number four is Ozzy Osbourne. Ozzy hasn't been well for quite some time. We know he's got early stage Parkinson's. Sharon, his wife and manager, really savvy when it comes to Ozzy's finances. So, with Ozzy, you know, it doesn't look like it, but there's a lot for sale with Ozzy. You know, did the TV, multiple mm-hmm. TV shows, the Sirius XM channel, you know, Ozzy's Boneyard. You know, there's something to be had there. And, you know, with Ozzy's, We look at Ozzy, you get, you know, for the songs that he wrote or co-wrote, he gets a piece of the action every time it gets played on his own Sirius XM channel. So
that's a good deal.
Good deal for him. I mentioned Fleetwood Mac. John McVie is the only member of the five not to sell out his share in the band's songs. So I think it's just a matter of time before that happens. Bob Seger. You know, he knows how to put money to work. Remember, you know, Chevy using Like a Rock for their pickup commercials for decades?
That was perfect fit.
Yeah. And then old time rock and roll. I mean, how many times have you heard that in how many different situations?
It. Yeah.
So he's already had his farewell tour. He turned 77 in May. He's a big fan of sailing. He's always out on Lake Michigan. And, you know, hey, that could buy him a new boat.
A couple of them.
Yeah. Steve Miller. He's only really had a half dozen major hits, you know, ones that stick around for a long time. You know, the Joker, Fly Like an Eagle, and Swingtown, and, you know, all those. They're still staples of rock radio. Mm-hmm. You know, they're played over and over and over again. So they must generate a tremendous amount of money. So I apologize for the pun, but Steve, it's time to take the money and run.
Well done.
I've got Noel Gallagher on this list. Everybody else we've talked about, with the exception of Sting, has been an American citizen. I don't know where Noel would fit in tax wise, but you know, he was the band's primary songwriter in Oasis, which means he's made far, 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 far more money than any other member of the band. He's got a net worth of about 70 million US right now, which is, you know, happy. And I've talked to him, and he's told me, he says, "I'm so effing rich," et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? He could make a whole lot more. I mean, Oasis stuff continues to be very popular around the world. So we'll see. Number nine on my list is U2. This would be a massive one, because not only do they own their own publishing, but they own their own master recordings, which means if you were to approach Bono and the Edge and Larry and Adam, the price tag would be insane. I mean, Bono and the Edge each are worth about $700 million. Huh. The other two guys are around, you know, I don't know, $350. So U2's current value, you know, with everything, is about, it's close to $2 billion. So they could sell, but why? I mean, yeah. they're doing just fine. They're bigger than some of these companies that are doing the purchasing.
Trying to buy them.
Exactly.
That's mind-blowing.
Number 10 would be the Beatles. This is never, ever, ever going to happen, simply because I don't think anybody could ever afford what the Beatles catalog might fetch. I did some sort of back of the napkin calculations, and I mean, this is just me, but a minimum, the Beatles catalog, 251 songs, I think, calculations, somewhere beyond $2 billion. And McCartney's never going to sell, because he and John Lennon lost a big chunk of their publishing company, which is called Northern Songs, back in the 1960s. And he finally managed to get most of those songs back. And now he's worth about, I don't know, $1.5 billion. And he's, you know, got his song. He owns his songs now.
That's so good.
John Lennon, worth about $200 million. George sits at about somewhere around $172 million. And even Ringo. Ringo's doing well. His estimated net worth is $350 million. Nice. And this money is generating, you know, reliable revenue all the time. So nobody on the Beatles side, nobody with AppleCore, nobody with Universal Music, who distributes the Beatles music now, nobody wants to sell. They're going to hang on to that.
Yeah. So it does a couple of questions for me that I feel like, I don't know if they've sold already or what. That raises questions for me. One would be the lady that we talked about before Christmas, because of the amount of money she makes on Christmas alone. Wow. What about Mariah Carey's library? I mean, I don't see here many of her old songs really killing it today.
You know, that's a fascinating thing. Mariah Carey has become, you know, despite the fact that she has all kinds of chart records and she's sold millions and millions of songs and albums, she is now primarily known as the All I Want for Christmas Is You person.
Yeah.
So if you were going to buy something, you would maybe just buy that. And what did we determine? Was it $16 million this past year?
I think we were.
21. Okay. So $21 million this year. And if we average it out over the last, you know, 5-10 years, you can probably put a 15X or 20X valuation on that. So she would make a ton of money from it and save on taxes. So, yeah, you know, Mariah Carey would certainly be one of them. I know that Madonna... So Warner Music has been with, you know, she started with Sire Records with Seymour Stein back in the early 1980s. And then that eventually got absorbed into Warner. And I've heard stories that Warner wants to, and this is the word they're using, relaunch Madonna somehow. I don't know what that means. And I don't know what that would entail. But you could bet that Warner was thinking, you know, Madge, you want to part with some of these songs? So
is it time?
I don't know. I don't know if she would do it, but you can bet. You name any big artist, Billy Joel, there's another one. Hmm. You name any big artist with a very, very deep catalog, and you can bet that one of these dozen companies has approached them already.
Yeah. Okay. So then that's amazing to me. The Madonna one, I come back to Elton John.
That's an interesting one. Elton John has gone through some serious financial issues because he's a compulsive shopper, yeah. Compulsive collector.
Yeah. Have you seen the Uber Eats commercial with not Lil Nas X? He's like, you don't look broke.
I don't have any money. yeah, and it's that would be another huge one, but and I'm sure he's thought about it, especially when things have gotten a little low in the tank. The bank account's gotten a little bare, but not right now. I mean, I'm listening to his audiobook right now called Me, which is his autobiography. And if the book and the tone there is anything to be, is any way to judge things, there's no way he's ready to sell. No way.
Queen must be a monster on revenue still.
You know, like, why would you keep getting longer? Yeah, Queen would be a good one, especially since, you know, if you could work out, I think what happened was that Freddie's estate is now being controlled by his longtime friend, Mary Austin. We don't hear anything about her. And she's been very, you know, fiercely protective of Freddie's legacy and image. But, you know, maybe at one point the guys get together and say, look, it's time to cash out. We've got this at Mary. You got the likeness and image for Freddie. I mean, think about how much money we could make from that. We've already done $1 billion at the box office for Bohemian Rhapsody. You know, it's all. And you think Brian May has not been well. He's had a heart attack. He's had COVID a couple of times. Roger Deakin, the bass player, and the drummer. Lost it anyway. One of them has not been well either. Hang on, I'm so embarrassed that I can't remember the drummer's name of Queen. Drummer Queen, it's Roger Taylor.
Of all the people, of all the things you know stuffed into that brain, you get a free pass, man.
So what, I can't remember which one of them, but the has either Roger Taylor or John Deacon, hasn't been well. And has not been seen very much lately. So maybe, you don't know. Pink Floyd, you know, you look at, is interesting because David Gilmour has sold off a ton of stuff. I mean, a lot of his guitars, including the famous Black Strat that he used from 1972 until the end of Pink Floyd. He sold a house and he gave all the proceeds to a homeless charity. So he's sort of cleaning the cupboards and decluttering. And getting rid of stuff that no longer sparks joy. So he could be part of it. Roger Waters, his bandmate, former bandmate, Nemesis. He's 77. Hard to say. I don't know. Yeah. Again, if somebody comes to your house with a dump truck and there's $500 million or more in it and they dump it in the driveway and say, give me your life's work. It's going to be really hard to say no, especially if you have plans for that money.
Well, I'm going to ask that question of the audience now. What other bands do you think are missing from this list that we've talked about? I've got a couple in mind, and really grateful for your time and your sharing. Alan Cross, The Ongoing History of New Music is the best podcast. It's available on CuriousCast.ca. I'll go that far and say that because I love it. And not only that, let's just keep in mind the basics here. This is Shirley's Boy.
Okay.
Thanks so much for being here, bud.
Hey, we'll see you later.
This is the Shift Podcast.
Let's dig into the mind. You ever wonder how a millennial thinks?
Ooh.
It's curious, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really curious. Well, here it is. Snapshot. Look inside of the cranium of Ryan O'Donnell.
The millennial on the radio, it's Ryan O'Donnell.
Did I mention?
There it is.
I'm now on a group chat with Ryan and his dad.
Ooh. Yeah, it's there. I don't know what kind of riveting conversations we're going to have. I spent the entire last commercial break looking at pants that I could wear and buy. So that might be it if you're into that.
That's the standard. That's the standard.
My friend just sent me a picture of this new rug he got. It's in the shape of a Nike shoe, and I want one now. for my new place. So this
you
is
are
how the
so good for the
works.
Economy, though. Like, you are so good for the economy.
I'm propping it up. Canada's not going to go. I don't know if we already are bankrupt. Probably on our way, but they won't, because I will buy all the stupid crap nobody else wants because I think it's amazing. Okay, lots of fun stories. There was a bit of the news of the breaking variety tonight, and that is to do with Novak Djokovic. He is the legendary tennis player who was being held in Australia because he went to go play at the Australian Open to defend his title. He went on a vaccine exemption visa, but when he got to Australia, they went, this isn't good enough. This is not proper enough. This does not fit into our rules. So they basically said, you need to leave. And he decided to fight that visa cancellation. And a judge has agreed with Novak that he should stay and play, and that it is valid. The judge said that Djokovic could have had more time to make a submission about why his visa should not be withdrawn if authorities had stuck to the original time. And by that, I mean the player was told he would have until 8:30 local time last week, Thursday, to make comments about the visa cancellation. But they made the final decision shortly after 7:40. So the current thing is that he is able to play, but Immigration Minister Alec Hawke could still cancel his visa on other grounds. Visas are stupid. As a millennial, anytime I hear anybody talk about traveling international and I hear about the visa program, it just seems like a absolute nightmare. And I think this just goes to show how complicated it is when you have rules in one country that are completely different in the other, and then you're going there and you just expect it to be nice and easy. So this is
he is filthy rich.
Absurdly rich.
He has people
he's got
who
incredible
do
incredible lawyers. Yes, that's the thing. If this happened to any citizen that was not a world-class tennis player, you would probably have lost this. He has some of the. I'm sure he's got an amazing legal team.
Did they tell you where he's staying? By the way, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, it's a locked. How did they describe it? A holding hotel. I saw.
Yeah, and so it. Yeah. But, you know, it's like, so this guy is filthy rich, right? And he's staying in a hotel with people who are basically refugees and who come into the country and seek asylum. That's where they put those people. It's you know, these are people that they don't have paperwork. Oh, my God, I got to get out of my country and I'll prove to you that if I go back, I'll be, you know, in danger and all those kinds of people. You know, with those kinds of, I shouldn't say those kinds of people who have led those kinds of lives is what that's more clear. Mm-hmm. And so he is in that hotel, Mr. Rich Pants.
Yeah. A very comfortable looking hotel. One interesting thing though, there wasn't any indication as to what his exemption was. He is arguing that because he has had COVID twice, including having it on December 16th of last year of 2021, that should mean that he has strong enough immunity and a low enough chance to transmit the virus that he should be fine, which I know a few doctors that might disagree with that, but I guess it's not the worst medical exemption I've heard. So, I mean, look, as it stands right now, he will play, he will defend his title, and he could win and by statistics go down as the greatest tennis player of all time. But this is unfortunate. This is an unfortunate shadow over this tournament and drama that I don't really think anybody needed right now. I doubt the Australian government's going to send him home. I think they're just going to let it happen. I think this is what's going to happen. And again, it just kind of goes back to he's so rich and he has such a high profile and he is such a public figure that he's going to get away with it.
I don't know, man. There's a lot of speculation that he's going to get booed. So this will be the telling thing, I think, that when he goes on the court, do the tennis fans who love him cheer him, or do they boo him for trying to get into the country? And that'll be telling. The thing, though, Rye, that I just feel like it's important to include is that regardless of his vaccination attempts or status and all those things, he was very clear even before the vaccinations were released that his stance was anti-vax. So even though he's got COVID and he uses that as his excuse, reporters have gone back in time in his socials about his comments about it, and he was anti-everything before they even came out.
Yeah.
So, and that doesn't bode well for him.
No, it doesn't. He's always been a bit of a polarizing figure, but you can't deny his talent. Like a lot of players in the NFL, for example, incredible players that do questionable things. Any sport, actually, you're going to find that. But this is definitely one of the more interesting COVID policy conflicts within a sport that I've seen. And I'm excited. I'm interested to see where it's going to go. But that's the news as it stands for this evening. Now, let's go to a much more... Shane, you're going to like this topic. Okay, so first question. There's this thing that I wish every single YouTuber and professional, like social media star, people who have actually been successful online would ask themselves before they do anything. And that is, what am I willing to do to get views? You tend to find this desperation, or maybe not desperation isn't the right word, more so feeling that they have to do something crazy, big or eye-catching to take their career online to the next level. It's either people who are just starting out or people who have garnered a couple hundred thousand subscribers or a big enough base, and now they want to push it so they can get into the millions. And so many people online have this burning desire to make it big, and some people nail it. They do a great job of finding their niche. They do something fun or innovative, and it creates an audience for them. And sometimes they do crazy things that are terrible and awful and get the worst kind of attention on the internet. And today I have a view stunt that has blown my mind. It is the closest I have come to giving up on the internet since that time Logan Paul, a YouTuber and now I guess a boxer, showed a dead body on a YouTube video.
Come meet Amy and I tomorrow for the Pepsi Halftime Supervine.
But this morning, Logan Paul is in some hot water after he posted a video allegedly showing the body of a person who recently committed suicide. The video viewed over 6 million times in just 24 hours. It was part of a series Paul was posting from Japan.
That was one of the most insane things I've ever seen happen on the internet. Like, he just posted this video thinking, yeah, this is fine. Very much not. I thought he was going to get canceled, but instead it actually was a really good thing for his career. He is now a boxer, and he has a net worth, by the way, of $35 million, even after doing that. That happened in 2018. Okay, so today's subject is not worth millions upon millions of dollars. It is kind of in that niche where you've got someone trying to make it big, so they're going to take the next big step. I promise not all millennials think like this, but some of us do. How do you top that? Well, you crash a plane, according to this guy. The video is literally called I Crashed My Plane. It came out on Christmas Eve, an upload from a gentleman named Jacob. As the name implies, the former athlete was involved in an incident that saw him parachuting into a Nevada mountain after an alleged engine failure. He described it as the most intense experience of my life. Jacob literally launched himself out of a plane moments after things appeared to go sideways. In the video, he opens it up and he says, hey guys, we're going to be taking a trip off and we're going to do some paragliding. We're going to do some stuff. He had his friend's ashes with him. He was going to go spread them. And then, like, right before he got in the plane, you know, he does the ad. He goes, check out this product. Thanks for sponsoring. And then I'm serious. 5 minutes later, he's like, I need to bail out. And he jumps out of his plane. And there's like a camera mounted on the wing. You can see him jump out of the plane. You watch the plane crash from the onboard cameras. And people have pointed out that it does not look like it does not look like this plane actually crashed accidentally. It looks like he crashed it on purpose. The way the cameras were rigged, the video never shows him actually showing anything wrong with the plane. There's no view of the of the actual interior of the cockpit. There's a full investigation that's been launched by police because this guy literally crashed a plane. Quote, I did not think I would make it out alive. I promised myself I'd fly that route with the parachute after a friend died on the same flight and it came in handy. Please fly with the parachute, which I think in general is a good thing, good note. That's definitely not bad advice. But there's a lot of aviation experts that are saying this is a really bad thing that you've done. Like if this is real. Now, that's the key thing here. There is a full investigation, so we will know. But I just, Jacob, why wouldn't you just put a video that said, I crashed my plane? And the title being, hey guys, I'm going to jump out of my plane and crash it. Instead of potentially creating a lie where you make it seem like you were in danger when you never really were. If you're just more honest, this is the thing that's lacking in content online is honesty. The honesty, if you're honest with your audience, you don't really have much to be afraid of. You don't have, you have nothing to hide. So somebody might disagree with what you did, but your audience can't say that you lied. If he had been honest about this, I would be talking about this story. This guy did something really stupid. He crashed a plane into a mountain and he might get a, fine for it instead of lying about it. I just don't, this is one of the toxic trends online that people need to stop doing because this video has over 600,000 views and is getting more and more and more, but this could get him in some serious hot water.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Actually, it sounds an awful lot like your earlier boxer, Mr. Paul, who they have slowed down the videos of making it look like he actually fixed the fight that he was in. And it was all a stage because the guy, he makes a gesture, the guy drops his guard, he hits him, he gets paid. So, shocking. Integrity. No integrity on the internet? It's an amazing notion, that one is.
Thanks for listening to the Shift Podcast.
Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show and share with anyone you like. Get it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CuriousCast.ca.